Good afternoon, Mad River Valley, and it is afternoon. We're 5 minutes late. Chatting with Beefer about Zimbabwe. That was fun.
Yeah. A lot of Vermont-Zimbabwe connections, apparently.
Yeah, I think so. My neighbors just got back. And this is Jerry with the 4-H show. Health, harmony, happiness, and humor. Hopefully we'll have some humor this hour. I think we all could use some. And you're listening to WMRW LP Warren 94.5 FM and streaming at WMRW.org. And thank you for listening. And I'm here with my co-host, Amy Hornblass.
Yeah.
So, and she was waiting on the steps for me, and I was so glad to see her because I wasn't 100% positive you'd come in.
Made the trip. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How long is it?
It's an hour and 15 minutes.
Well, which, that's a hike.
Which I think is a bargain for free speech.
Yeah, yeah.
I would travel further if I had to, and so I think that's a good deal for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a dedication, too.
Yeah.
I mean, to free speech.
Right.
Which I think most of us here at the radio station have.
Yes.
But I only have a 10-minute commute, so.
Right, but you've dedicated yourself to the show. And so I came in today to find out more about that, Jerry, about why... why you're here and what led you to community radio and all of that.
Well, when we first moved here, I found out about the school. There was a local voice. We moved here in 02, so just about 20 years. And there was a cheese shop downstairs. And there were local cheese makers, the Falaces. In fact, they're still here in East Warren, and they still do cheese workshops. Anyway, they had a little shop downstairs. The building used to be a one-room schoolhouse for East Warren. Mm-hmm. And then it got reverted to the town. And in this building that the radio station is in was almost a fire department test case.
Oh, no!
Yes, they were going to use it for training the firemen and burn it down and have them put the fire out. And this was way before my time, so I don't know the specifics on how it did get saved, but I'm guessing people rallied together and the town ended up buying the building or inheriting the building. So now the town still owns the building, but it's leased. And at that time, the Falaces rented the downstairs for the cheese shop, and the radio station was upstairs, and the radio station takes up one corner of the upstairs section, and then the rest of it is public meeting space. And there were several things that went on then that I think have dissipated since. There was a homeschool group that met once or twice a week. There was just a community, like a philosophy type group that mm-hmm. met in the afternoon for tea. There were several things that gone on, but since the market, the Falaces ended up leaving, and the valley got together and formed a co-op. And they have a board, and they put in the co-op that's downstairs now, and it's a really great little store. Mm-hmm. And they've taken most of the upstairs as part of their kitchen, and they make all kinds of food. They make a lot of breakfast items. They do takeout dinners, I think, Friday nights. I think that's the only night they do it. Mm-hmm. But the food is wonderful, as you can tell by the smell when you're sitting in the radio station.
I know. I wish we could share the smell with people.
Yeah,
it's really great in here. It's just delicious.
It is. If you walk upstairs, you'll just get wafted by these wonderful smells that the girls in the kitchen make. But you can still, they're still use it for community space. Just during the day when they're cooking, they kind of spread out. But mm-hmm. other than that, it's still a community space that can be used. So, which is nice.
So you wandered in here because of the cheese?
Talk about going off on a tangent.
That's great.
Yeah, I got involved with the localvore movement, which back then was spearheaded by Robin McDermott. I don't know if you're probably not because you're not in the area, but she's just an unbelievably fabulous organizer, smart, one of the smartest women I've ever met. And she was organizing a group, calling it the localvores. And the ultimate goal was to try and eat everything you eat, all of the ingredients would come from within a 100-mile radius. Mm-hmm. So we dedicated 1 week out of the year, and people would sign up. It was like a pledge you would take. For 1 week, you would only eat food that was made from ingredients within 100 miles. And that sounds easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, you think Vermont, there's plenty,
it's
right?
Not easy. No sugar.
No.
No sugar, no coffee. Mm-hmm. No. Like, there's so many things right. that you use on a daily basis that you weren't able to use. But I think the first year it was stricter. The second year, I think she decided, well, let's open like spices, things that will last on your shelf for a year you were able to eat if it wasn't within a 100-mile radius. But I remember we wanted corn, like popcorn. And I drove to Mallet's Bay. There was a farmer there, and I can't remember his name, but he grew popcorn.
Oh, excellent.
So I went and got a whole load of popcorn, and we put it into bags, and we gave it to people who had signed up for the local war movement, so at least they could have popcorn, because snacks are really hard. I mean, you know, chips and all that, the junk food, which you probably shouldn't eat anyway, but so no junk food all week. Uh-huh. So we did that to get popcorn anyway. It was really fun. So another tangent.
And when, what year-ish?
That was around 04.
Okay.
Yeah. 04, maybe 05.
Oh,
it was
wow.
right in that. Or 04 to 06. It went on. She did it 3 or 4 years, and there was a group of us. It was like a board for the local wars, and I was on the board, and she put out a newsletter. I even still have a little cookbook that she made. And she did a radio show. It was called The Dinner Hour.
Oh.
And that's how I originally found out about her. The stuff is starting to come back to memory. I turned on the radio station, and she was doing her show.
Excellent.
And she would interview local farmers and local chefs, and it was a really cute show. For a while, she did it with another local resident, Serena Fox. Mm-hmm. And then Serena ended up, it got to be too much for her, so Robin did it by herself for a while. But then, I don't know, she left the station, I'm not sure why. But that's actually how I originally found out about the station. And I'll never forget walking in here for the first time and just going, wow, this is so cool. Community radio station.
Uh-huh.
I met John Barkhausen, who's the manager, and he said, well, why don't you do a show? And I said, well, I don't know anything about radio. Well, I'll train you. And he was just so upbeat and so much fun, and I said, well, sure, I'll do that. I'll give it a try.
Good for you.
Yeah. So my first show was a garden show called Roots and Shoots. And I would get guests, but I just felt like I had just started a vegetable garden, and I just didn't know enough. I mean, I just felt like, I mean, the more you learn about gardening, the more you realize you know nothing.
Right. I know. Yeah, that's true.
So then I went from that to mind your own business. And what I did was interview business people in the valley about who they were and what they did, and try to promote them. And I wanted to do that because I had a travel business at the time. And we started a networking group in the valley, and I came to realize how difficult it is for small businesses in an area where the population is so sparse to just make a living.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so many people that have small businesses live here because they love living here, and they don't really care about money or making a ton of money. They just want to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And just to do that is a struggle.
Right.
So I thought, well, here's a way. They get some free advertising. They get to talk about their business. They get to expose who they are and what they do to the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for quite a while.
Great.
And then, you know, I got a little burned out because it's a lot of work. And lining up guests is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And then when the pandemic started, I decided, none of us, including me, know much about health.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of like gardening. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know. But and so I thought I would. We hear so much of one side of that issue,
mm-hmm.
and the other side wasn't getting heard at all. And this station is about free speech and letting everyone having a discussion, you know,
mm-hmm.
and talking about all sides of every topic. So I thought I would start the show.
Great.
So here we are.
Wow, so it seems like you pick up on a need that you're interested in addressing yourself, and then you share, you bring the, you know, you share the airwaves with people who need who need to be heard, whether it's business owners or local farmer you had on a few weeks ago was really excellent.
Is that Amy? She's an Amy, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, and have you, being from, I don't know if you've seen their farm.
No.
Oh, we got to go there.
Okay,
I
got to
take you there. It's just, and she's done a 180. I mean, Dave is a great farmer, but she's the artistic, the creative, the, and she's just, it's beautiful. It's, you ride down 100 and it just turns your head now. It's mm-hmm. really cute. And they sell a lot of stuff. She cans a lot of the produce that they grow, and they make jams, and they have kids events, which you would love. I mean, mm-hmm. They have this little cow train, and the kids sit on each little car on the train is a cow.
Uh-huh.
And the kids sit in the cow and go around the farm, and it's really cute.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Oh, wow. So we're so lucky to have you here in the Mad River Valley. And where'd you come from? Where do you hail from?
I was born in Pennsylvania, in Bucks County. The town I was born in is called Washington's Crossing. And it's the very spot that Washington crossed the Delaware to Trenton, New Jersey for the Battle of... Trenton was, I guess it was called one of those battles.
Mm-hmm.
I should know, because it was on Christmas Day that he crossed the Delaware, him and his men. And every Christmas Day... to this day, they reenact it. So if you ever want to see Washington cross the Delaware, you can go to Washington's Crossing, Pennsylvania, and watch them do it. They get dressed in this and all the uniforms, and they have the same boats, and mm-hmm. it's really kind of a fun thing.
Yeah. Oh, great. So you grew up there.
I grew up there.
What's it like? Is it country, rural,
city? It was.
It was.
When I was a kid, our house was right on the Delaware River, and when I was a kid, it between my house and the town of New Hope was about 8 miles, just farms, all rolling farms. You drive along the river and the water was on one side, mm-hmm. and you could see New Jersey on the other side, and on the left side was all farmland.
Oh.
If you did that today, you would, there's one preserved area that's maybe 20 acres. The rest of it is solid housing developments.
Oh, wow.
All housing developments, one after the other after the other. They used to be considered McMansions, but they were probably, most of those houses were built in the 80s, and by today's standards, they don't even come close to mm-hmm. a McMansion. But when they were being built, compared to the size of the house I grew up in, they were big.
Yeah.
But it just, big's never big enough, is it?
Right. Apparently not.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's still a beautiful area. I'm cutting it short because mm-hmm. it is a beautiful area and it's on the river and there's a lot of history there too.
Mm-hmm.
New Hope was New Hope at one time was all artists, and now it's a lot more t-shirt shops, kind of like Provincetown, you know, the same type of thing. But it's still pretty and it's fun to go visit. There's still a lot of the big old stone farmhouse barns. That even the people who built the McMansions preserved the barns, and some of them are restaurants, and it's still a pretty area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a canal next to the river, which this is pretty unique to that area, I think. And the canal is 60 miles long because they used to send lumber from the Pocono Mountains down the canal to the city of Philadelphia. So it stops just before Philadelphia in a town called Bristol. But along the canal, there's a towpath that the mules used to go on to pull the barges, and the towpath is still there, and it's a great place to bike and hike, run, and you know, you can kayak, and it's really, really nice, and it's 60 miles long, so it's pretty unique.
Yeah.
It starts in Easton, which is just before you get to the Pocono Mountains, and we call them mountains. Compared to Vermont, they're not really mountains, but...
It's all relative, like the McMansions, you know?
Yeah, the Rockies don't think of Vermont as mountains, I guess.
Right. So speaking of all these places, you love to travel, right?
Yeah, I had a travel business for 30 years. My first exit out of the travel business was 9/11. When that happened, no one was going anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I had a travel agency. It was about an hour from New York City, and we still lived in New Hope, Pennsylvania, but I worked in New Jersey. And when 9/11 hit, we had people stuck all over the world. I mean, different countries. I had a family that was in Patagonia, and they were there for 10 days before they were supposed to come home. Forget the 9/11 or 9/12, they were scheduled to come home. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, there were some people could be listening who weren't even born then. all the air travel just immediately got shut down mm-hmm. when they went into the towers. So we have these people traveling. I mean, we have business travelers in Europe. We had people all over the place. Couldn't get home. Couldn't go anywhere. So that was a freaking nightmare.
Right. So you were their travel agent. So they're calling you. I mean, this is even before everybody had cell phones and everybody had email. And so you were just in your office, like, answering these phone calls of distressed customers from...
Yeah, the first couple of days, everyone was in shock. Uh-huh. I mean... We closed down the office. Everything closed down. Oh. The business is closed. Everyone was just in total shock.
So a timeout.
Timeout. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And people who were away were in shock. I mean, no one was really... Everyone... It was like getting stopped in your tracks. Mm-hmm. And do you remember feeling that way? I don't know if you remember it that well.
Yeah, no, I remember it.
And then... But I guess it was the third day. That's when mayhem started. Mm-hmm. All right, I got to get out of here. I got to come home. I got Oh, God. And, you know, as you can imagine, the flights were all overbooked. The airlines were going insane. And it seems like it was 5 days or 6 days before air travel really started to ramp up again, where they were getting close to a normal schedule. Mm-hmm. And then you had to get everybody rebooked and everybody on flights that were overbooked and get them all from here and there and back to where they were going. Right. The one I remember distinctly was the family in Patagonia, because there were the mother, the father, and the kids, and they were on vacation. And, you know, they just had to pay to stay and it was 10 days.
Oh, my goodness, for all of them.
Yeah, all of them.
Wow.
But, you know, it was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So then, I don't know, we just decided to... Then it was months. I mean, no one wanted to travel. No one wanted to go anywhere. So anyone who had any trips booked canceled.
Oh,
no,
geez.
One was booking it. So, you know, I was still paying my employees, which was really difficult. We went through a lot of our savings.
Oh. Wow.
My husband had started working in the office about a year before 9/11, because he worked in logistics and trucking, and he was sick of it, and I needed help, and so he came to work with me, and it was working out really well until the hammer came down.
Oh.
So both of us, no income.
So now you're both in one fell swoop. Oh, no.
So we sold the building and sold our house and expatted to Vermont.
Oh, okay.
No jobs, no nothing, but...
But crisis and opportunity, and you just jumped right on it.
We did. Yeah, we did.
Why Vermont?
Well, originally we were going to move to Colorado. Mm-hmm. We actually had a deposit on a place. Are you familiar with Leadville?
No, but I used to live in Fort Collins.
Oh, okay. Fort Collins is... we went to school in Greeley.
Uh-huh.
So that's really close to Fort Collins. Leadville is the highest incorporated city in the country.
Oh, wow.
It's at 12,800 feet.
Woo-hoo! You were going to really...
Yeah, I know. Let's go to Leadville.
Yeah.
So we did. We put a deposit on a place, and then our house didn't sell. So the deposit was for 3 months. So after the 3 months, the realtor in Leadville called us and said, do you want to extend this contract? Because it was contingent on the sale of our house. And I had gone to the mailbox and got a letter from Ron Shaler. And Ron Shaler was a realtor here in the Valley. And the letter said, do you remember you rented a condo here at Sugarbush 7 years ago? And you told me if any of those condos ever came for sale, you would want one. Well, I want to let you know that one is going to be listed soon, but I wanted to let you know first.
Wow.
The very day.
I just got chills. Oh, my goodness.
So talk about karma, providence,
whatever
you want to call it.
And
we both looked at each other and said, okay. Because the 3 months that we had it listed, I was just really worried about being that far away from family.
Right.
I mean, my family was all here. Harry's parents were really old. And to get back and forth, and I was really starting to have a change of heart about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when she called and said, do you want to extend the contract? I wanted us to talk and say, you know, maybe this is an omen. And then when we got the letter, I said, absolutely an omen.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So you had come here to stay at Sugarbush.
We did, for a year. We had a condo at Sugar Bush for a year.
Oh, wow.
It needed a lot of work. It was in disrepair, and Harry spent the year just fixing it up. And we sold it and bought our house that we have now. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, he went to work for Sugar Bush. And I've never really had a job. I've never had a job. Mm-hmm. I never worked. I always have my own business.
Really? Awesome.
So I'm thinking, I don't know. So I did get a job. I went to the travel agency in town, and it just didn't. I think I'm too obnoxious to have a job to work for someone.
I don't know. Obnoxious is the word I would ever use for you, Jerry. But you know.
Well, anyway, it didn't work out.
Used to your independence.
I'll just scrape together clients and do my own thing again, and that's what I did. And that worked for about till the pandemic hit, which was a rerun of 9/11.
You know? Right, at least you'd been warmed up once, you know?
Exactly.
Must have been like Groundhog Day.
Well, not only warmed up, but now I'm in my 60s, and I said, you know what? Time to retire. So here I am.
Uh-huh.
But it's funny, when I was doing the business show, I still had the travel agency, and I couldn't talk about travel because, like, you know the rules of programmers. But I could interview other people.
Mm-hmm.
About their business, but I just couldn't talk about mine.
Right.
But now that I'm not doing it anymore, because it's not my business.
Right. No so profit can, yeah. for you to talk
no.
about.
No. Not that there was a whole lot anyway. But yeah, it's definitely a fun, you do it for the fun.
Yeah.
And the love of travel.
So that's what I really want to talk with you about, is your love of travel.
Yeah.
So when did that start?
When I was 2.
When you were 2? Oh, my goodness. Where'd you go?
I climbed out the bedroom window when my mother put me in for a nap, and I followed the kid next door all the way to his school.
Oh.
And he turned around. He didn't know I was there, and he turned around and saw me, and he started walking to me. And this is, I got this from my mother, who got this from him. I don't remember.
Right.
And I started screaming. And I wouldn't let him come near me, so he had to turn around and walk all the way back with me following him all the way back. And that's a story I got from my mother. So that was the beginning of my travels.
Oh, wow. You were just like hell-bent. I am going somewhere. Yeah. If I have to take myself there.
I guess. And I think I've been that way ever since.
Uh-huh. So where have you been?
Geez. Most of Europe. I've been a few African countries, Malaysia, Borneo, Indonesia, Russia. I haven't been much. I've been to Hawaii, but not Fiji or any of the South Pacific islands. I haven't been to that area, or Australia or New Zealand, but most of the other, China, been to Hong Kong, Macau, where else? India, the Caribbean, all over the Caribbean. Almost, I'd say a large portion of the more developed Caribbean islands, mm-hmm. you know, Canada, Bermuda.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorites.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
It's really beautiful. The people are, the Bermudian government, at least this was the case, I haven't been there for probably 15 years. You have to be Bermudian to work there. And the Bermudians are well paid. It's really a well-run government, at least it was at the time. I hate to say that because governments change so much. But at the time I was traveling there, and I had been there several times, I developed a relationship with this music group called the Bermuda Strollers. And we brought them to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, to a few of the different colleges there so they could play for the college students. It was really fun. So I had a pretty good connection with them. But the people were well paid, and they got good benefits, and for a Caribbean island, the islanders did well. They were good. Well off, whereas Jamaica was the opposite. You know, all the money that comes into Jamaica goes out. It doesn't go to the people who live there, and it's really sad. And so much of the Caribbean, I think, is that way,
mm-hmm.
whereas Bermuda wasn't. It was, you know, just... And again, it could have changed, because I know the Virgin Islands... St. John, St. Croix, and St. Thomas are U.S. possessions.
Oh.
But the corruption has gotten so intense there, it's not even safe to travel there. And again, this was 10 years ago. I haven't looked into it since then. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, maybe it turned back, but I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's a U.S. possession, and that's unforgivable to me. for the United States government to allow that kind of thing to happen, because the islanders are the ones who suffer the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But I love the water. Have you been to the Caribbean?
Never.
The ocean is fabulous. I mean, it really is like the pictures you see. In fact, the pictures don't do it justice. Mm-hmm. And the beaches and the people are warm and slow, and it's a slow way of life. You just cannot help, after being there for a few days even, just, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Just calming down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Decompressing,
getting rid of stress. You know, it's just the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I really love the Caribbean.
Yeah. And it sounds like you really connect with the people and pay mm-hmm. attention to the actual culture
yeah.
around you.
Yeah, and the culture is great. And I love Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
People say that Jamaicans are dangerous. Like anybody would, mm-hmm. the money that comes into the island from tourism, they don't get the benefit from it. They're not well paid. They're not well treated. These big resorts like Couples and Sandals, and if you ever heard of them, they're mm-hmm. owned by foreigners. The people don't get very little benefit. They get jobs, but the jobs are so poorly paid they can't even, you know, put roofs on their head, over their heads. And I'll never forget, I was at one of these luxury, the wine and dine travel agents, and I was a travel agency owner, so I got to go to these places, and they pay for you to go and see the resorts and all that. And I was at one of these luxury resorts, I don't remember which one, and there was a window, we were waiting in the lobby for the tour to start, and I just happened to look out the back, and you looked out the back of this luxury hotel on the beach. That's another thing, Jamaica, a lot of the beaches are blocked. You can't go to the beach if you're a Jamaican.
Wow.
Which is really upsetting to me.
Yeah.
Not all the islands are like that, but Jamaica is. And here are these little shacks, I mean, literal, little tiny shacks, with people doing their wash in a stream. I mean, and you're at this luxury hotel, and that's right outside the back window.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the inequity, talk about inequity.
Mm-hmm.
India maybe is worse.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and why? I always think, why does it have to be that way?
Right.
And so, you know, I think when they talk about, one of my favorite places is Costa Rica. And Costa Rica is another place where I think the people, it's a fairly decent, relatively speaking, not non-corrupt government,
mm-hmm.
where the people do okay.
Mm-hmm. And have access to the resources themselves.
Yeah.
A little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, and Costa Rica has not, at least years ago, did not allow the U.S. government to meddle.
Mm.
And they were one of the few Central American countries. And then you take a place like Nicaragua, mm-hmm. where the United States has meddled immensely and allowed these criminal elements to take over the government, and that's why there are the problems, and that's why there are so many people trying to get into the United States illegally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we maybe helped them instead of hurt them, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have the immigration problem we have.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. If people felt safe at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, people want to stay home, I think, largely. People want to stay with their people and their place and, you know, the landscape they're used to.
I absolutely think that. They come here because they're desperate.
Yeah.
It's a desperation.
It's a desperation, yeah.
Especially Nicaragua, Honduras, even Mexico.
Right. I mean, even you didn't want to be that far from your family, you know? And
right.
you were comfortable flying and you could afford a flight, but you had seen how even those things can be interrupted.
Yeah. And people do expat, but I think it's mostly people with money who know they can go to another country and live comfortably,
mm-hmm.
and they're not happy with their country for whatever reason. You don't have people swimming across a river with their kids on their backs because they feel like it. You know?
Right.
That's desperation.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess if we could get to the root problem of what's causing the desperation, I think it would really go far to solving our immigration problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate your interest in sort of getting to the root causes and not letting these things that could keep us from communicating, letting them get in our way.
Yeah, and communication, I think, is key.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So where would you recommend people travel nowadays? I mean, do you think travel is done on this planet now, or is it going to have a resurgence? What should people do and plan for in the future?
You know, that's an interesting question. I haven't been out of the country since the pandemic hit for a few different reasons.
Right.
And I guess maybe it's because I traveled so much that now I just want to... I mean, I've been traveling, but only by car.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we went to out west in March, and everybody was supposed to fly but me, and then my husband at the last minute decided he'd drive out with me because I just said I'm not flying.
Right.
So that's that. Talk about doing a 180.
Yes.
from the minute I'd get back, okay, where am I going to go next, and looking for flights.
Really? Is that how you used to be?
Oh yeah. That I would get back and where can I go next, and I was in the right business because I could put a group together to find some place that I wanted to go, put a group together, and take them and go.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's fun. You don't make much money, but you do get to travel.
And make friends.
Make friends and communicate. And that's another thing about being a tour conductor like that. You get to know people who live there a little more intimately than you would just going as a tourist, because you get to know the people in the business and they're locals. And I've made friends, you know, even in Kenya. I have a really good friend that I made from taking a group to Kenya. And so you have that really interesting connection from being in the travel business, which I really appreciate. I think travel is a mind-opening experience. It can be. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. I mean, if you just appreciate other cultures, it gives you a deeper appreciation of other cultures and other religions, other ways of life, other food, you know, just so many things. It'll just open you up to the universe. You know, there's a whole universe out there, and if you don't see it, you'll never really understand. I think it gives you a better way to understand people.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's my cell phone. Turn it off. Sorry, guys.
Oh, I like that sound.
I should know better.
Well, we need a little music.
Yeah. There you go. I even brought CDs because I always
Great.
There, but I'm not sure. Okay.
Yeah, so I've traveled a little bit, and when I was traveling, I met quite a few young Australians who were doing their walkabout.
Oh.
When they, like, after high school, some of them would get this ticket where they could hop flights around the world.
So you were in Australia?
Well, no, I was over in Britain. But a lot of Australians wanted to come back to what was their, you know, familial homeland or whatever, and see it as part of their walkabout. And it just, you know, and you were just talking about the importance of travel. I mean, one thing I am worried about is if one of the results of this COVID crisis is that travel becomes more restricted, especially for young people.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I mean, since the pandemic, when you ask me recommend a place, geez, it's tough at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's a place I haven't been that I would really love to go that my friend, who I think you know, Rob Williams, has been to a few times, and that's Tibet.
Oh.
I'd love to go there just to see the monastic. It's a culture I've never been exposed to, and that I'd like to see. But when you say now, who knows? I just don't know what's going to happen. You know, what's going to happen with restrictions and passports? And it's a scary time to me.
Right. You know? And getting stuck somewhere. I mean, it just seems like, now the safety of that, you know, even after 9/11, that was earth-shattering. Like, what? I might not be able to make it home for 10 days.
Yeah.
You know, that was a new concept for me.
You know, that's such a good point. That was a new thing that I can't remember in my lifetime ever experiencing. You know, it was. And maybe in the past. Like, I'm just now reading this book about the 1918 pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning so much. It's really an interesting book. And maybe that happened then. I mean, the travel was just so different 100 years ago. But, you know, like you said, that was earth-shattering. Mm-hmm. I think anyone who was our age and lived your age remembers 9/11. It was earth-shattering.
Yeah.
Probably. I can't think of anything else to compare it to prior to that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then with COVID, some people were literally stuck for a year or more and unable to return, weren't they?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Maybe not from so much visits, but maybe living abroad or things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember we almost got stuck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I had taken a group to Japan. And we were flying back from Japan February 4th. And it was funny because...
2020, February 4th.
This was 2020.
Wow.
Yeah, we flew back from Japan.
Wow, you were right on the cusp.
Right on the cusp. But then the next... In March of 2020, we went to Colorado and did get stuck. Well, we didn't get stuck. We ended up getting back. But while we were in Colorado, that's when they shut the country down.
Oh, wow.
So, and we were out there. But we were able to get our flight to JFK Airport. And I remember JFK Airport was like a ghost town. And all the staff in the airport were running around spraying antiseptic all over all the seats and benches and everything and just wiping it off. And you had to wear masks. Everyone had masks and all the restaurants were closed. I mean, it was totally bizarre.
Wow.
But we did end up getting back. But in Japan, and this was like the last 2 weeks of January that I was there, I would say over half the people you saw on the street had masks on. And I kept asking, well, why do people wear masks? You know, this is like clueless. Why is everybody wearing a mask? And people there do not speak English. I mean, they're very nice and very polite, and they want to answer you, but they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So, a tour guide would come, and I'd say, why is everybody wearing a mask? They said, well, it's really a polite thing, because if someone isn't feeling good or has a cough or something, they just wear a mask so they're not coughing on you. Or, and she said, sometimes women wear masks because they don't feel like putting makeup on.
Oh, interesting.
So they'll just wear a mask. I said, there you go.
Oh,
because
wow.
Because the women, you know, Japan, the women are all very properly dressed and well made up, and their hair is perfect, just like Vermont.
Right. Or the juxtaposition.
Yeah. So then we get on the plane to come fly back, and this was February 4th, and I sat next to a guy from Wuhan.
Uh-huh.
And still clueless at this point. We did hear there were like whisperings of some virus or something happening in China, and something was going on, but one member of the group actually bought masks and gave them to everybody in the group. And he said, here, put these on. And there's something going on. And I said, I'm not wearing a mask. And I'm trying to remember the guy next to me. I don't think he was wearing a mask. Anyway, he said he lives in New York, but he was from China and he was visiting family and his flight got canceled. So he was able to get a flight from Wuhan to Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And then he got on our flight, Tokyo to New York. And that's why he was sitting next to me. It's still clueless.
Yeah.
I never did get COVID from him, so I guess
right.
That's a good thing.
Even on an airplane, even I circulating air and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is a different world. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know about... I don't know about travel. I mean, it's... Like you said, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. Wow. But, yeah, and that's the voice of experience.
Yeah.
Talking. But
yeah.
You are driving places.
Yeah.
Where could we drive to from here that you think would be an interesting place to go?
Well, what's on my top of my list is mm-hmm. drive to Alaska.
Oh, interesting. I just met somebody yesterday who said, I was just talking with a friend. I mean, I didn't just meet her. I was talking with an old friend, and she said she wants to drive to Alaska.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she did.
No, she wants to.
Yeah.
So what advice or how would you go about that? Or?
Well, I haven't done it yet. Uh-huh. What I would ultimately like to do, if they let us in, is drive across Canada and into Alaska. And you know what? You used to... This was back in the 80s and 90s. You used to be able to drive to Siberia, believe it or not, because they had a ferry that went from Alaska to Russia. And
wow.
You could take your car on the ferry so you could drive to Russia.
The old Bering Strait kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's neat.
But they did away with it, and someone told me a few years ago they were bringing it back, but I don't think they ever did.
Uh-huh.
I don't see that happening, especially today.
Well, that
anyway, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I'm skipping a job to Siberia. Who knew?
Well, remember, wasn't it Sarah Palin? She said she could see Russia from her window, so she knew all about the country.
Right? Goes to show, you got to see it with your own eyes, right?
Yeah,
to really know it.
Exactly.
She agrees with you in a way. We can find common ground with anybody.
Exactly. And I would drive to Mexico, but I can't talk my husband into it because he thinks that's nuts.
Oh, how come? Why would you drive?
Thinks it's dangerous. Oh, why? Because I would drive to South America.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to get on a plane.
Right. Well, and driving is a great way to travel.
It's a great way to travel. Yeah. I mean, we drove out west in March and we just had so much fun. It was part of our vacation, the drive. I wish we had more time. If I do it again, I'd like to do it a little slower.
Ah.
I mean, we only spent 2 nights out and 2 nights back, but it would be fun to take like a week or two just and see, you know, just go out of the way.
Yeah.
Off the main road. And so, and I saw things. I mean, I've been across country a bunch of times and I still saw things I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
In this country. Yeah, it was really fun and interesting. It's not quite the same, I don't think, as a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, you know, parts of the country can be a different culture.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So.
A little bit off. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what about you? Talk about your travels.
Oh, I haven't. My parents really liked to travel when I was a kid, so we did get exposed to a lot of traveling when I was young, which was great. I feel so fortunate that we, went to California. We went a lot of times to New York City and neighboring states. A lot of times, some road trips and things like that.
Yeah,
And then I went to Scotland when I was a Goddard student. And visited intentional communities. And
oh, I love Scotland.
Yeah.
It's a great country. People are so much fun.
Yeah. What wonder. I would have moved there in a heartbeat,
but
it was too far from family. I felt like, you know, that was just too far, which is why I can really understand that people wouldn't leave their homeland, you know, and possibly never see their great grandparents or grandparents or parents again, you know, unless they really had to leave that. I mean, they'd visit somewhere, I'm sure. And so I think travel needs to stay open, but I haven't traveled much, you know, as an adult. I found Vermont and I just love it so much.
Yeah.
I'm satisfied. Right. And every time I come back home from somewhere, I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God I'm home.
I totally get that. And I think that's what's kind of weaned me off of my travel bug, too.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, as a kid, our vacation was a camp in the Pocono Mountains that had an outhouse and a well where you had to go pump the water. Which we loved. Don't get me wrong. We loved it. It was a blast. My mother hated it. But that was our travel.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, you had an escape, a place to unwind.
The escape,
And experience something different.
My mother didn't see it that way. But
So how big is your family?
There were 7 kids.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So my youngest brother died as a baby. There's really 6 of us. But my youngest brother, he was 15 years younger than me, and I have a sister 3 years older. So
that's
the spread. Yeah, there's 18 years between the youngest and the oldest.
So I could see where pumping water and taking care of all those children would be challenging.
Exactly. Well, my dad was the youngest of 14 kids, and his father died before he was born. Or there probably would have been more.
Mm-hmm.
His father was a coal miner in Coaldale, Pennsylvania, and died in the coal mine.
Oh,
and my father wasn't born yet. So maybe that was a blessing in disguise. Who knows? Can you imagine having 14 kids?
Wow. And then having them alone.
Yeah. Well, when he was born, his oldest sister was 21 years older than him.
Oh,
so
wow.
She kind of, you know, I think she was, a lot of them were out of the house, but he took me past the house that he grew up in. And it's unbelievable. It's this little clabbered house on a little street in Coaldale, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just trying to imagine all those kids running around in that house. He said when he was a kid, he'd go over to his friend's house around dinner time, hoping they'd ask him to stay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, talk about poverty. It's,
right.
It's hard to relate.
Right, and that maybe that family didn't have enough to spare or something. I mean, you know, oh,
you
my goodness.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
So if you don't mind, I do want to ask about Woodstock, because you did mention that you were there, and I'm sure you get this question, you know, but what was it like, and what was your experience of it?
Well, I was only 14.
14!
I wasn't allowed to go.
I was going to say, how did you manage that? You were supposed to be out of friends.
Plotting and planning and...
Wow.
I got my older sister talked into going, because the only way I got her to go is the guy who was driving was, she had a crush on him.
Uh-huh.
And so I convinced her to go, because then she got to be with him. So there were five of us, and we didn't have tickets.
Mm-hmm. And, where were you living? Were you in proximity?
Washington's Crossing.
Oh, okay.
That's where I grew up.
So is that, that's a drive to Woodstock, right?
It was about an hour and a half.
Oh, geez.
Or, yeah, maybe 2 hours.
Oh, that's closer than I thought.
2 hours, yeah. It's pretty close.
How could you resist then? Definitely.
I guess, New Hope, be about two, because it's about 2 hours to New Paul's, and Woodstock's, it was a couple of hours.
Oh, easy squeezy.
So we, the other thing is, I had to think up a tale to tell my parents, because I wasn't allowed to go. No, you're not going to Woodstock, and don't ask again. Okay, I won't ask again. I'll just figure out how to make this happen.
Uh-huh.
So we told... Because my old, I wouldn't have gone away with it without my older sister. I needed her. Mm. Because the guy driving was really a friend of hers. I mean, they were 17, 18, and I was 14. So we said we were going. Michael was taking us to the shore. They had a little place at the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. He said we were going with his family for the weekend. So my mother's busy, you know. She has, like, five kids running around tugging at her. And okay, fine.
Yep.
And then, so we went, and then that Friday night, they saw Woodstock on TV. And then my mother said, something's up, and she called Mrs. Walsh, and Mrs. Walsh said, where are the kids? And she said, well, they went to Woodstock.
Oh, cat's out of the bag, but you don't have a cell phone, luckily, so she can't read you.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, my sister tracks her kids now, and I said, that is terrible. Can you imagine being a teenager today? And your parents can track you?
I think some of these Woodstock, you know, graduates, people who live, are now more restrictive than with their kids.
Yeah, but I think that's horrific. I told her, I said, she's worried about my niece's boyfriend because she's suspecting he's, like, physically abusing her a little bit. She said, I have to. I said, that's not going to help.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's tough.
It is tough, and I feel for her, but all tracking her is going to do, in my opinion, is, and I don't, you know more about kids than I do, and I don't have kids, so it's hard for me to say, but I just really think it could backfire and push Julie away, the other way. Because Julie, when I was visiting, Julie was livid that Seal was doing this, and I just thought, this can have the opposite effect.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I can't imagine. God, I would have had such a boring teen life if I was getting
if your mother could track.
I wouldn't have done half the things I did.
Right, and then we learn from those experiences, positive or negative, because there is the potential for negative experiences out there.
Yeah, sure. But then don't you need them too?
Right. I learned so much from that kind of stuff.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think you learn as much or more.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to do Woodstock all over again, even in spite of the fact that I got in so much trouble.
Uh-huh.
My parents sent me to a private Catholic girls' school. Yeah, it was really bad. They cut off my hair. They grabbed my hair and cut it all off.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, there was sort
bad.
Of a cultural hysteria, though. Well, I mean, the parents were freaking out, too, because this was...
And I was so young.
Uh-huh.
But again, that didn't help.
Right.
That didn't help.
It didn't
do anything.
So what did you learn from Woodstock that made it worth it?
Learn is the experience.
Yeah.
I would do it again in a heartbeat just for the experience. I can't really say I learned. The music was unbelievable. And I guess maybe just the atmosphere, and really what they say is how it was. It was just, there were no no problems, no one fighting. And it rained. I mean, the weather was miserable. There was food, though. People were giving away food, and they had... We were lucky because Michael was smart. He went up to a local farmer and asked if... And he brought a little camper. Mm. So he asked the farmer if we could camp on his front lawn and paid him. Mm-hmm. And so we had luxury accommodations compared to most people.
Right, a roof.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was literally, I can't think of a fight, uh-huh. a single transgression among all those hundreds of thousands of people.
Wow.
I just don't remember one thing that was just... violent or vicious or even mean.
Aggressive, yeah.
You know, people were sharing whatever they had. Mm-hmm. People were just having fun. I mean, it was just like a fun thing. And the music was unbelievable.
Yeah. So what was your favorite? I mean, I know it's hard to prioritize. They're all so good, but is there one or two or three that you want to bring back to memory?
Most of the regular ones. I mean, Jimi Hendrix, how do you forget him? And Joan Baez. And, just there was so much of it. There was just so much of it, and I was so young, mm-hmm. and I hadn't even smoked pot at that point. Mm-hmm. I mean everybody was doing drugs, and that was the other thing that I distinctly remember was the air just smelled like pot. I mean, it just smelled like pot. You were breathing in pot. Uh-huh. So many people were smoking it. And it was just Canned Heat. God, I loved them.
Ah, yeah.
And Gracie Slick, when we got up, we walked in the morning, and she was starting that morning maniac music. And that's a memory that's just embedded in my head.
Gorgeous.
It was quite an experience.
Wow, and you really went and appreciated the music. So you didn't get... too high to, fell in love and wandered off, or, you know, but you, I
was like a kid, mm-hmm. Might have been one of the youngest people there without their parents.
Mm-hmm. Without their parents.
I really was a kid. I hadn't, and I just remember being awed by the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Just walking around being awed.
Yeah.
It was really something. And like I said a minute ago, there was literally no fighting.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe.
Right. It is. It is definitely.
I mean, 3 days and the weather, it did let up, and then it would rain again, and then it would let up. But you were in a mud pit. I mean, mm-hmm. it was muddy.
Yeah, there was no escape from the damp and the
Yeah. And
discomfort.
No one cared. Yeah. No one got upset. No one, it just... And the musicians, too. They were fabulous.
Mm-hmm. They set the tone.
They did,
I think. Of peace
they
and
did.
Love, respect.
Yeah. And that was that age, that time. Mm-hmm. And what amazes me is people my age who grew up then and were like me and went to Woodstock or Peace, Love, and have done a 180. What happened to those people? Where did their minds go? Why? I don't know. Why are we so divisive?
Right.
Why are we so not understanding of people who don't think the way we think?
Yeah, so there was positive change in that movement.
I think.
But it went to, I don't know, yeah.
I don't know, because they're the same people. They're people my age, that are all for all this suppression of free speech. Mm-hmm. Suppression of, medical mandates. Having the government tell you... I mean, what? How do you come from that to end up here?
Yeah, to trust the government, do everything it says with complete obedience. I know.
Yeah,
it's
the same
opposite.
People.
It's
the exact opposite.
Right.
Of what they were. So I don't know. I guess some of us never really lost that mm-hmm. ideology where you think... And if I've learned anything from the pandemic, I think it is that discussion and discourse and understanding is the most important thing we can do with each other. Mm. Because that seems to me to be the biggest thing we've lost.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who it is. I don't care if they voted for Trump. Just try, why? Why did you vote for Trump? What did you see in him that you connected with? And they might say something that makes some sense.
Yeah, try to understand.
Yeah.
Try. Yeah.
And figure out where they're coming from. And, and I believe that 99% of people have good hearts. and do things for what they think is the right reason.
Me too.
Even though we might not all be doing the right thing, we strive for it.
Wow, Jerry, that is like the perfect, beautiful wrap-up.
Oh, that's right. It's
we have
1
literally
o'clock.
35 seconds, and you just said that was my last question that I really want to make sure I squeeze in was, why did you do this show? And I think you just answered that question.
Yes. Yeah. And I know you're on my page, and that's why we're co-hosts.
Yes. Oh, this has been such a blessing.
It has. I don't think I've ever gotten interviewed before.
No? Well, we got to do it again because I still have more questions. Thank you for all your dedication to sharing your heart and this open space for people to communicate.
You're most welcome. And I think next week I have my sister visiting, and you're doing the show end of the month. So next week we may not have a show, or I may coerce my sister into coming on the radio. So if she does, I'll post it from Porch Forum. And if not, we may just have Hal next week, and then you'll be doing the show on the 30th. And then the 7th, I'm going to try and get Allison in to talk about her candidacy.
Great.
So, yeah. So I hope everybody has a great week.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks for a really fun interview. And I'm going to turn you over to Hal. Gary Jackson comes on at 2 with Weekend Warm-Up. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Listening to WMRW 94.5 FM.
There you go. All right. We'll see you in the future. Let's see.
A roster of recreational activities supported by the Mad River Valley Recreation District funds. Attendance will be free, but donations are encouraged to help finance the completion of a much-needed irrigation system for the park. Call 802-793-0109. Call 802-793-0109 with any questions. See you at the Funathon. Da 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 da